our Easter weekend edition of Rosie on the House. We're up in the trees this morning with certified arborist John Eisenhower of Integrity Tree Service. You've got a tree you've been wondering about the health of or questioning how to trim it, fertilize it, care it, stake it, irrigate it. This would be a great opportunity for you to get online because we do have one open line at 1-888-767-4348.
So we've gone through our selection process. Let's talk staking. Once we've got the hole, it's about twice the size of the root ball coming out of the box. And then, oh, there you go. And I hear.
But not deep.
That's right. Yeah. I hear more trees are planted too low than too high.
Right. You don't want to plant the tree too deep. You always want it to be right at the surrounding soil level. And once the tree's in the ground, you don't want to stake it if you don't have to. There's usually a travel stake, they call it. It's a small stake that's actually taped right to the trunk of the tree to kind of keep it protected. It's called a travel stake just because it's supposed to get the tree to its final destination. But once the tree's in your yard, you want to take the tree off of that travel stake because it tends to do some damage to the trunk if it's left on there too long. But once you've taken that travel stake off, see if the tree is able to stand on its own. If it's pretty stable in the ground, don't stake it unnecessarily, because the problem is people sometimes have trouble weaning their tree off of the stakes. So the point is to put a tree on a staking system that allows it enough movement to keep that that trunk healthy and as I said, adapting itself to the wind. You don't want to hold it so rigidly that it ends up leaning into the staking system too heavily and becoming more dependent on it.
And you see that a lot where they've got a stake, you know, 180 degrees apart, two stakes, one on each side. And man, those wires are stretched so tight that thing's upright like it's
yeah.
Absolute.
That's right. You don't want to do that. You want to try to keep it a little more loose in the staking system. There's an art to doing a good stake. It should be there as a fail-safe to prevent the tree from falling over, but not to prevent it from moving.
Now, you want it to move. That's its exercise, bending, weaving. If we've got a more of a mature tree, we've got the winds coming, and mesquites are notorious for this because they grow so fast. And if they're not irrigated properly, and we'll get to irrigation, the roots don't develop the way they can, and they topple over. We've got to be able to have a wind canopy through there if you're not letting it just grow natural as a shrub like it will, but you're trying to get the height and the elevation, you've got to let that wind pass through there. How do I trim it to be wind dynamic without...
Well, there's been a lot of research done, especially, you know, a lot of it by Dr. Ed Gelman in Florida on wind dynamics and what is the best type of pruning that gets the most bang for your buck. And contrary to popular belief that thinning the inside of a tree makes it more, makes it safer, they found that doing end weight reduction pruning is really your best way, because that's where all the
end weight reduction,
making proper reduction cuts, reducing the length of some of those longer wayward branches. You do some thinning, but you want to be sure that you don't neglect the outer third of the canopy. And good quality tree services that understand how to do good pruning that way will know how to balance that pruning between thinning and reduction cuts.
I think that's harder than just reaching up in there with a saw and thinning it out, because when you're cropping that outside weight dimension, then doing it wrong, you're lending your tree to what, that fox tailing?
Yeah, that lion tail, or that
lion
witch,
tail.
That witch's broom. That
witch's
occurs.
Broom.
Right. You don't want to just lop off branches at an arbitrary location out on the ends. That would be some end weight reduction, but that's not really the proper way to cut back those longer branches. We always cut back to either a point of attachment or to a lateral branch that's at least one-third the diameter of the branch you're cutting. That way the tree will look more natural. It'll suppress that suckering response that, you know, where you get that big flush of ugly growth out of the cut. No, you don't want to just cut a branch off at an arbitrary location. We call it a heading cut or a stub cut, because that will lead to even worse problems down the road. But good quality reduction cuts can give you good wind resistance and prevent a lot of failure. But you have to have it done by a good qualified arborist.
Pat's in Prescott. Dave's in Goodyear. John is in Glendale, but first on the line was Roxanne in Green Valley. Good morning, Roxanne.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Hi. I have a Meyer lemon tree that was planted last year. And I planted it in an area that I thought would not get a lot of wind, but I thought wrong, and it gets just really whipped around. So I put down some rebar, put some burlap around it, and the tree seems to be very happy. It has tons of blooms, and the bees have gotten in there with the blooms. But my question is, how long can I leave that burlap around it? Is it detrimental to the tree to leave it there?
No, I don't understand the connection between the rebar and the burlap. Can you explain that?
Sure. I put down rebar around the periphery of the tree, and then I took the burlap and put it around the rebar just so that it would cushion the tree against the wind.
That's her attachment, burlap to the ground. And her in-between attachment was the rebar.
I see.
And this rebar is almost immediately adjacent to the trunk?
No, it is out from the limbs of the tree.
Sort of supporting the tree, though, out at a little further away from the tree?
No, it doesn't support the tree at all. It surrounds the tree. It's probably 2-3 feet from the base of the tree.
Let me ask you this, John. Do you think the burlap's necessary?
Well, again, I'm not quite sure what she was using the burlap for. I'm having a hard time picturing this.
Because the way that the wind comes through and hits that tree, I was afraid it was going to blow off.
Oh, so it's more of a wind. It's just a windbreak.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. No, it's a great idea. It's a great idea. It's going to protect the tree, and it'll also protect the tree, the fruit and the blossom too. Because that's a lot of times if we have a strong wind event right when trees are putting on their blossom, it'll knock all the blossoms off before they have time to set. And the following year, people will wonder what happened to our crop of lemons this year.
And that goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning and planting in groups. They would protect each other in a shaded area. So if it was one lemon tree all by itself that everything blew off, where three or four, you would still get a lemon harvest from the inner core of that.
Well, what I would do is see in a 6 months or a year if the tree seems to be pretty stable on its own. Of course, as it gets anchored better in the surrounding soil, eventually you should be able to take that burlap down.
Tom is next online from Glendale. Wants to talk about one of my favorite trees, the oak tree. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning. I have a couple of, I think they're called Arizona oaks or something like that. A couple of them in my front yard. Beautiful trees, big giant canopy covering the sidewalk. Love them. Two questions. When's the right time and how aggressive can I get at pruning them, because they are very thick, and second and more importantly, they drop hundreds of thousands of these little acorns. Is there a way to keep that from happening, or do I just get myself and my neighbors have to live with that mess? I'll hang up and listen online. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
Yeah, Tom, your concerns are shared by many oak tree owners. Oaks are a very durable, strong, stately tree. They are really one of the nicest trees, I think, in the area. I think they're underused in the landscape, but they do have a heavy litter, some of them worse than others. There are different cultivars, and some of them have a pretty heavy acorn drop. And yes, there's not much you can do to prevent that. There are some, chemicals that you might do a little bit of research with your local nursery or even a pest control applicator to see if they're labeled for oak trees. But there are some chemicals that can reduce fruit development. But you'll have to find out if they would apply to your tree variety.
Olive is probably the most popular in Arizona to treat to keep it from fruiting out.
Olive stop, yes.
So there is one for an oak tree?
I'm saying, I don't know. You'll have to kind of do some investigation if you're really serious about trying to prevent that. They have to be sprayed at a certain time of year to prevent the fruit production.
And he had asked about trimming. They're evergreen,
trimming,
aren't they?
Trimming, yeah. You can do a little bit. Be careful not to thin out the interior too heavily. The temptation on those trees that have a tight branching structure like the oaks is to get in there and thin them out heavily. they do not regenerate growth very quickly on the interior. So be very selective. Get a good qualified arborist to come in and help you with that.
Continue our move north. We're going to go to Prescott now and bring Pat into the conversation. Good morning, ma'am. How may we help you?
Good morning, and I hope you can help me.
So do we.
I have four, maybe there might be five out there. I think there's four. They were originally called dwarf golden arborvitae. And when I planted them, they were about 2.5 feet high. They are now so tall, they're above the roof eave. And I don't know, I've talked to the various nurseries and arborists here in town, and none of them can give me any kind of an answer on, can I top these? How do I trim them? Can I trim them back? Or do I just learn to live with them?
Well, I had a similar question from a customer just this week. They said, what do I do with my arborvitae? Arborvitae are very unique. They have a pear-shaped canopy that grows right to the ground. They grow out. They have a knife edge type of a foliage that only produces green foliage right out at the perimeter of the tree. They tend to die back in to, on the inside of the plant, so there's not a lot of secondary foliage for you to even cut back to. They don't have lateral branches on the interior that allow you that ability to make those reduction cuts I talked about earlier. And I had to say, there's not a lot you can do. You can top them, you can raise them, you can pull them in, but the results of those of that kind of pruning is so destructive to the beauty of the natural beauty of the shrub that I never recommend it. I would probably suggest, like these other arborists did, that you live with the trees as they are, because they'll never look any better than they do right now.
We appreciate the call, Pat, and good luck with getting you. They're called an
arborvitae.
What describe that?
They're an evergreen tree, a conifer. They have a really unique kind of a Hershey's Kiss type look in the landscape. They get really large. They can be 20 feet tall. They planted a lot of them back in the 60s and 70s, and you'll see them in a lot of older neighborhoods. And they're just huge trees. They get really wide and overtake a lot of homes. You'll see them kind of dwarfing some of the small homes down in the downtown Phoenix. They can be almost half the size of the house.
And what better way to enjoy a nice shade tree than a little lawn underneath it if you've got the right match for it? But there's nothing worse than sitting in a lawn that has been infested or taken over by weeds. That's where Bonide's Weed and Feed comes in, with over 200 kill list items that they've mentioned, such as Creeping Charlie is a good one. We've got a couple of ones, dandelions, onion grass. None of those are any match for Bonide's Weed and Feed. And with the Weed and Feed, if you apply it now, it'll give you a good 8 to 10 weeks fertilization. So if you've still got your winter lawn going, we're keeping ours going through the end of May. It's kind of our tradition for birthday party celebration that we have for Tinley. We've got to have that lawn still, so we keep our winter grass going. In fact, I've actually got it in my truck, because that's one of this afternoon's project, to make sure we've got it nice and green. If you're in Tucson, you can get Bonide's Weed and Feed at Savano and Phoenix, at Baker Wind Nursery, and in Glendale, Summer Wind Nursery.